test, one, two. It's actually a test, not a check, because it's an open-ended investigation into product quality.
Wow, bro.
This show is sponsored by Qualitest. Deploy software that you and your customers trust with Qualitest Testing and Business Assurance Services. Learn more about Qualitest at qualitestgroup.com. Welcome to The Testing Show. I'm Michael Larson, your show producer, and this week we have a panel of wild and wonderful guests. Let's welcome our regulars, Justin Rohrman.
Good morning.
Our special guests, Jess Ingrassalino.
Good morning.
Gary Hion.
Good morning.
And, of course, our ever so active moderator, Mr. Matt Heuser. It's all yours, Matt.
Thank you, Michael, for the fine introduction. We're back this time to talk about the tip of the spear. What is cutting edge in agile testing? Where is agile testing going? To do that, I brought in two people that I think are absolutely positioned to speak to that. First, we'll talk about Jess. Now, I can't remember where I met Jess. I know it was in New York at a testing meetup a couple years ago. And since then, I know you work for Bitly, just a bunch of different companies doing API-like test automation. But tell us what you've been up to, Jess.
Thanks, Matt. Yeah, actually, we met at the QMA meetup in 2013 in New York. So in Midtown. I actually just recently started at Salesforce.org. I have been doing some automated testing, working very closely with DevOps to increase the availability and usefulness of test environments. And at Salesforce.org, even just in my first month, it's been a great experience getting to know the ops organization because they have a really amazing approach to test environments and DevOps that helps because their product is the most complex product that I've worked on.
And that's saying quite a bit. Welcome, Jess. We also have Gary Hion, who has been kicking around QA for a long time, including gigs as the Director of Quality Assurance for Ecosys and a partner at Meridian Precision and Global QA Director at Experion, and continues his progression as a business manager for Qualitest Group. Tell us a little bit about you, Gary, and what you've been doing at Qualitest Group.
It just seems like yesterday I was helping companies adopt agile methodology, and now at Qualitest, I'm helping companies take agile and actually become a DevOps shop as our clients are looking to deliver products faster into marketplace and really integrate the development QA and operations organizations together.
Fantastic. So now you know a little bit about Jess and Gary, we should talk about the news. And I think the latest and most important and relevant news is this DDoS attack that took down everything from big-time.com reliable websites that people were using to run their business to, like, I'm not clear on this. It actually
Spotify,
stole
Reddit, stuff like that.
But it stole cycles from, like, your local DVR to do it, right?
That's correct, yeah. So let's set the stage for this. There's an article that was just recently published on this called Meet the Company Whose Webcams Shut Down the Internet Last Friday. And yeah, in this case, what makes this interesting is that this absolutely massive DDoS attack was not perpetrated by botnets comprised of computers, but instead from internet-connected devices. Last Friday's attack was carried out by compromised DVRs and webcam devices infected by a piece of malware called Mirai. It's not particularly sophisticated malware, but it's proved to be very effective because, as was quoted in the article, internet-connected devices often have poor security and easy-to-guess default passwords. Those of you who have your home routers, or if your webcam has a password that you aren't quite sure about, might be a good time to go change that.
So is that like the default network name is Cisco 123, and the default user ID password is admin 123, and somewhere there's just a text file with a list of all the default usernames and passwords, and whenever it gets into a network, it just has to crack that, and then whenever it finds a machine, it just tries to crack that?
I would be impressed if it was that advanced, to be honest. Seriously, it is disturbing. I take Caltrain, and I, just as a little experiment, I check out my little Wi-Fi list, and it's amazing how many completely open and just ready to connect to devices I can find. I don't, you know, because that's just rude and wrong. But if somebody were less scrupulous, they could easily go in and jump on just about anybody's machine and take over it. So the thought that you can do this with your DVR or with a webcam or with an Internet of Things device in your house, exciting times, yes?
When I got my router out of the box, it had a username and password on it.
Did your internet adapted toaster have good security?
Yeah,
or
probably
refrigerator?
Not.
They have determined that they can trace back a fairly large number of the infected devices can be tracked back to a single company. Hangzhou Xiangmai Technology, they said that weak security helped contribute to this attack. Specifically, it's their circuit boards that were the vulnerability. It says that it's patched the flaws with its products in September 2015, and its devices now ask the customer to change default passwords when used for the first time, but older products are still vulnerable. So you're talking about devices that have been out there in the wild for better part of a year and more.
People probably don't even know they own these devices, too. Nobody looks at the board inside of your webcam to see what manufacturer it was.
Yeah, so in the good old days, we would have a registration card that you would fill in and you would mail. And then the manufacturer would know that you bought it and could send you a letter or something. People don't really do that anymore.
No, it's all online.
Yeah, now that's just a guarantee of extra email.
Right, so why even bother? But to get into the DVR, it would have to get through my router first. It'd have to get through my cable modem. So there's quite a bit of insecurity there. There's multiple layers of error. That is the thing that nobody thought about. The webcam manufacturer is a US-based company, bought a bunch of parts and stuck them together, and they didn't have anybody working on security of the board. So that problem killed them. And I think that is DevOps and agile testing, high reliability, deploy often. So what I worry about is, what are we forgetting to think about? When people talk about, I'm going to press a button, I'm going to get a green bar, we can deploy because I got a green bar. I think about that black swan problem as a way that testers can add value. That's a highly compressed explanation. But am I on the right track there? And what do you think is coming up next for agile testing?
I think one thing that this attack definitely changed is the way the entire market thinks about security. I know when I go home and I look at my internet-capable Samsung refrigerator or my smart TV, I never think about security because I don't really care if somebody hacks into my refrigerator until we can see how it's actually used as a weapon to actually create an attack on other sites that are more secure through denial of service. I think we're going to start seeing even a shift from the market on what people demand of these products that we really don't think need to be secure. That's definitely going to drive all the manufacturers of anything that's internet capable to do more testing. The test team itself is going to have to start thinking about those things to make their products more secure.
In response to that, I agree completely that it will, I hope, encourage manufacturers to add more testing and to encourage more robust approaches to testing these products. Something that I've seen shifting in some of the work that I've been kind of hired to do in multiple places is to take a look at the entire delivery pipeline from start to finish and say, okay, what does quality look like in each step? I think that the role of the tester is becoming more extended to come to terms with actually attempting to prevent issues from getting into the product in the first place by discussing testability, discussing quality in the product creation process before it ever gets into a development sprint for code.
I think Jessica brings up a good point where DevOps is really starting to play into this is DevOps is all about delivering very quickly. All these internet-ready devices can get firmware upgrades pushed down to them from the manufacturer. If we can get from development through QA and actually through operations extremely quickly, they can go and patch all these devices very quickly and prevent future attacks from happening in a short period of time.
Oh, there's so much there, Gary. I'm so glad you brought that up. And Jess, too. Abby Bangzer, we should have her on the show. She's great. She works for ThoughtWorks. She actually has gone into organizations that want to do something like DevOps. They have to design an A-B split framework, and they have to design a blue-green rollout framework so they can slowly shut down boxes as they ramp up others, and then if something goes wrong, you can roll it back. They're just like, we're just going to build it. No, you need to test that. You need to think about what could go wrong and then create scenarios and run them through. So she's actually tested these DevOps-like infrastructures. Speaking of which, Jess's point about collaboration in preventing problems. Historically, a lot of testers just don't have a great deal of technical skill. They press buttons to make sure that the thing happens. Failure demand is so high that that actually has more value than their salary. But when you take those people and they say, what about security? I've been in the room when testers say, what's going to happen when you've got the same user logged in two different devices, two different browsers, and they try to do conflicting things? This is during planning. Testers are told no user would ever do that. Sit back down. The requirements are one device at a time. Of course, we put the thing in production. 6 months later, the call center is lit up because a bunch of people are using their tablet and their computer at the same time and it's not working. I agree with you that that's where we need to go, but the average tester is not there yet. So how do we get there?
Go ahead. In terms of a lot of the specialist aspects of testing, like security is an obvious example, and also performance load testing, I don't think these things even fit into a DevOps cycle. Most DevOps work is built around very granular functionality. The specialist testing jobs are generally done off to the side, outside of a development sprint, because somebody noticed a need. It's not like a pull system there.
So I worked for 10 years for Cisco Systems, and I got a chance to work with them from when they were a very small company with just a handful of products to becoming a very large company with a lot of products and an intersection of hardware and software. How do we look at Agile or DevOps to include actual hard products like boards and circuits? And that's a bit out of the sphere of your typical software as a service model. When we think of Agile and we think of DevOps, yeah, we're thinking of a website and we're thinking of, oh, we do a quick A-B test and if we like this feature, we can push it out. Hey, if you're designing a brand new switch fabric for a Catalyst switch or a Cisco router and they have circuit boards and firmware and microcode, but you got to work with the intricacies of the actual hardware a lot of the time. And when you got to do a hardware push or a hardware tweak, that's just not something that a DevOps or an Agile environment is realistically going to answer. Or am I wrong?
Yeah, I think you bring up a great point, because the push around DevOps is a very high level of automation from end to end in the process. So I think you raise a great question when it comes to how do you deal with the hardware itself?
I think that if we extrapolate the abstract from the idea of DevOps, which is fast, reliable, repeatable, predictable, these are things that we want to have happen, and these are reasons why automation of all types has become the de facto standard. What is to say that that kind of process-oriented thinking can't be applied to hardware testing? I say this having worked at Nomi a couple of years ago, and it's a company that was purchased by Brickstream, and I did hardware testing there. That hardware testing, of course, we had customers that wanted this hardware and needed it in their stores and needed upgrades. The focus was on breaking down what needed to be tested, then working out, okay, how are we going to test this? How are we going to work through the scenarios and address customer concern, address our concerns, because it was not all our hardware. It was third-party hardware with some of our software installed. I think that for us to keep that in two-week sprints, we did break it down and we did focus on developing some thought processes around being able to repeat what it was that we were doing and to be able to say, okay, this is what normally happens, this is what we want to happen, all of the typical kinds of questions that we would do with software, just adding the layer of complexity that we would need to use that with a hardware device that we did not necessarily have control over.
Awesome. If we're talking about the tip of the spear, the tip of leading the embedded devices that update themselves for security so that you can do something like continuous delivery while the device still runs or attempts to run is certainly an area that needs research and work. I agree with Jess, it's possible. Most of us aren't Elon Musk, so most of us aren't going to have your car say, please pull over, rebooting. And if you bingo the update, that's really bad. Now you're stranded in Nevada with a car that doesn't run. Do today's testers have the skills to contribute valuable things in that DevOps environment? And maybe we should take a step back and define what we mean by that DevOps environment. A short version of that would be a technology infrastructure in place such that you could do continuous delivery if you wanted to. Do today's testers have those skills, and what needs to change to get them there? I'm going to throw that at Gary.
So one of the changes that I've been seeing with our testers in the DevOps world is we no longer have these testers that are purely automation people and these other testers that are more thinking about the product and thinking about writing test cases and then manually executing them before throwing them over the wall to the automation people. What we're finding is we need one person that pretty much does it all. Here at Qualitest, we're calling them quality testers. So that's our term for these people. What we're doing is in a one-week sprint, we have the tester writing the test cases and writing the automation. So when the developers finish with the development work and they do the build, it deploys to the environment and the tests automatically kick off. So we are seeing a bit of a shift on the skill level that we really need more of these automation type folks as part of the team.
So in my head, what that sounds like is you want programmers instead of testers.
No, I want testers that are able to program.
Justin, let's be fair. Isn't that very similar to a major project you're on right now?
I suppose it is. Yeah, in a way, like we're not doing continuous delivery, and the reasons that I'm doing high volume UI automation are different from the goal of small incremental updates. I joined this project after having 10 plus years of testing experience and study also. The demand I'm seeing in modern DevOps shops is for programmers that can write lots and lots of extremely granular test code, or alternately pairing to do that.
When you say granular, do you mean API level tests?
API or lower, yeah.
I'm also living La Vida DevOps, so to speak, in my own environment, in the sense that I am a software tester. I'm also the release manager, and I do a lot of manipulation with AMIs and with Amazon Web Services and being able to make sure that boxes come up. So I totally understand the idea that it's not that you need programmers per se. You need people who can test, but who can also write code to be able to implement those tests. And there is a fair amount of odd granularity that you have to be able to play with and be able to explore and emphasize that into code. And sometimes it takes a number of iterations to get right. That's definitely been my experience on a regular basis. Our team, just because of economics and people moving on to different projects, we've really had no choice. We've had to become a much more expansive group where a full stack developers and full stack testers, is there such a thing as a full stack tester? But where we have a lot of interaction and play with each other in regards to where it's not at all unusual for me to say, hey, I'm going in and I'm finding this problem with a log. And instead of just saying, oh, well, can somebody go take a look at that? It's, oh, I know where that file is. Let me go take a look and see, oh, hey, guess what? We have a parameter for that we're overflowing. Not just be able to say, hey, I found a problem. It's also, and I can recommend the fix for it. Or if you want, I can even try the fix out myself and verify that it works. Or I can push that myself. There's a whole battery of scripts that I have been working on before we get them into Jenkins that I have to run myself. And I've gotten pretty good at making bash scripts that will allow me to go in and set up machines, that will go in and allow me to set up security profiles, and then I port them into our system and they become just as much code as any software developer's code. So we're definitely seeing a blurring as to, am I a tester? Am I a programmer? Am I a build master? Actually, I'm all of the above and it's fluid.
I think you said it in there, and it was a very subtle point that maybe people didn't hear. One of the things that we need to be very careful about when we start looking at the testers of the future is, yeah, there's this heavy development focus on what the testers need to do. But first and foremost, we need to make sure that that person has the tester mindset. If we focus on the development aspect and not the tester mindset aspect, we run the risk of actually creating poorer tests with less coverage because the thought process is a little bit different.
I'm going to jump in and say to Michael that I love the concept of the full stack tester. You might have coined a term there. I have been actually, to talk a little bit about my latest role at Salesforce.org, I'm there working with Chris McMahon, and he's built a good portion of the automated UI suite already. And at my previous jobs, I built the automated UI suites for Bitly, for Nomi, and I did the front end for Rent the Runway. So I'm familiar with these technical aspects. The reason that I feel like, wow, full stack tester, I could relate to that concept. I think first and foremost, I do have what I would consider a tester mindset. And in fact, at Salesforce.org, I was hired to shift left, to shift testing left and make sure that quality is included as early on as it can be included in the process. And then also my technical knowledge makes it easier for me to communicate with people about what's going on. It makes it easier for me to pair. So even at a larger company like Salesforce.org, I was still hired primarily to do the exploratory conceptual testing with the knowledge that I would be pairing and working with DevOps. Absolutely, I think that all of those things, especially the mindset, are critical in a tester. And my technical knowledge has definitely helped as things move more toward a DevOps culture. It's something that people who have that knowledge, they're going to find their lives easier, I guess, because they don't have to push themselves to learn all of it. So having it is certainly a help. The mindset piece is absolutely, as Gary said, that's critical. We don't want to lose that. I find that the most brilliant testers that I've had the opportunity to talk to and work with, that's their defining feature. Everything else they're able to learn as they need to.
Let's talk for a minute about, we jump from the Google for testing level, obvious stuff, but we get really deep and we talk about the social dynamics that happens on projects. Michael and I have this experience in social techs that has happened so many times. When I was there, they hired Rick, they hired Chris, and they hired me. And each time they said, we're going to get a programmer, we're going to get an automator, we're going to get someone who can come in and look at our backlog of tests automation that was too hard to build, and that person is then going to build that infrastructure out. Same thing happened every single time. Rick jumps in. He has to both keep up with the pace of the ongoing development and build this infrastructure out. And so he starts out as, I'm going to be a programmer. I'm going to do network automation stuff. And a month later, he's a tester. He's just doing testing. He uses the framework to the extent that it's possible. He doesn't extend it. They bring in Chris. Same thing happens. Chris adds a CI framework in Ruby because he's kind of a Ruby guy. But he doesn't extend the Perl because he's not a Perl programmer. I come in. I'm a Perl programmer. And I do a little, and I mean a little. I actually made a few commits that were wrap a for loop around this command line parameter so you could say for everybody and you wouldn't have to type in the email addresses because all I do is get the object and do a for loop around it. Or I write some automation around search and tag, little things like that so we're not cut and pasting 6 lines of code but instead calling a function. We all get sucked into testing. So Gary mentioned this sort of both. I think it's extremely challenging to have, well, there's the maintaining the infrastructure and there's the writing the automation that keeps pace. Let's be honest. When you're writing the automation that keeps pace and you have to keep up and there's some risk that is outside the capability of the framework, like printing looks bad. What are you going to do when printing looks bad? You're going to have to export to PDF, which Selenium can't do because it can't drive the menus. You're going to create a PDF, and you get to look at it to see if it looks right. Defining looks right is extremely challenging. And some awesome programmer in the back is going to say, well, you could pull out all the fiddly bits that are the date logic, replace them with today's date and time, or just remove them completely, and then have a static file that has the dates removed, and then you can diff them. It's always possible, and maybe this is beyond the scope today, it's always possible to write that kind of automation. Nobody ever does it. So we do it manually and we hope it doesn't happen again.
So if I had to summarize this, I'd say the discussion is once again bringing it back to the tester role, where it fits in an organization and is there room for it in companies that are actually trying to do DevOps. We can claim that having full-time automators is the same thing as having a tester, but I think it's a fundamentally different problem. They're thinking about building frameworks and tools and things of that nature and not my opinion is that they're not so much thinking about actual testing of the product. The question is, where does the role of the tester go whenever we talk about moving to DevOps or moving past Agile?
I think as companies move more towards DevOps, and especially new companies that are just getting into it for the first time, they're reading a lot of great things on the internet about speed and automation. One of the things they need to keep in mind is the role of the tester, and what the tester needs to do doesn't change. Although we're going to automate maybe quite a bit more and push towards that automation, we still need to understand the fundamental role of the tester and what needs to be accomplished right from unit testing through the end-to-end testing.
As I'm thinking about this, I'm thinking about the testers, and I would encourage new testers to inform themselves about all of the different ways that testing is, quote, performed in different organizations, especially ways that they may not be comfortable with or familiar with. So if they've learned about exploratory testing, I would say they should take a look at automated testing. If they've only ever written automation frameworks, I would say, okay, go look at exploratory testing. I would encourage them to look at some security testing tools, encourage them to understand what Jenkins is, just so they can say that they have some understanding of a deployment framework. I'd say for testers, go educate yourselves, especially in territory where you feel a little bit unsafe, so that way that you're prepared for this brave new world of DevOps and the tester, because it's not going away. That's the one thing that I've seen.
And on that, what are you up to now? Where can people go to learn more about you and what you do? What's coming up soon?
Anybody who's interested in my random test and other thoughts can go to my blog. It's jessengrassolino.com. Anybody who's interested in teaching Python, it's something that's near and dear to my heart. Teachcode.org is my business. I work with New York City public school teachers, and I've written a Python book, so I'm very much invested in the Python education community, and will be chairing the PyCon Education Summit this next year, and the call for papers is going out in a couple weeks.
As for me, I'm going to be coming to Germany for Agile Testing Days in December, and we're bringing that to the United States, agiletestingdays.us, in June. That's going to be Boston North Shore area. We just ramped down a ton of work, and we're just starting to ramp up a ton of work. It looks like I'm going to be at Agile and Beyond in May in Dearborn, but I'm hoping next year to not overdo it on the conference circuit and actually get some real work done and see my family a little bit.
I'm going to be at home for a little bit, at least till the early part of next year. I have a baby due on November 7th, so any day now, basically. And
hey,
that's going to keep me away from conferences. Thank you.
Our sponsor is QualiTest. It's the only reason we can do this. It's a lot of work to get this together. It's a lot of research and time and investment. And QualiTest does underwrite us and provide us some funding, which is kind of a big deal. We don't talk about that enough on the show. We try really hard to make it non-commercial. But I think Gary should close us out with what's going on at QualiTest.
So we're going to be in Austin, Texas and Atlanta, Georgia for a couple of CIO summits. We're going to get the opportunity to meet with the leadership teams of some of the major corporations in the United States, as well as technology leaders within the financial institution. So that's our big upcoming happenings in November.
Thanks, everybody, for coming.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
See you.
Thank you for listening to The Testing Show, sponsored by QualiTest. For more information, please see www.qualitestgroup.com. Do you have questions? Or is there a topic or an idea you'd like to have covered? Please email us at thetestingshow@qualitestgroup.com, and we will answer questions we receive on air.